With me on the line is Pat Westhoff, the director of the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute at the University of Missouri. And of course, Pat, the House and Senate will soon be going to a conference committee to talk about the Farm Bill. Your organization, FAPRI, just recently put out a report about this upcoming Farm Bill, the House and Senate versions. What are some key takeaways from your report that we should know about these two Farm Bills?
Well, both the bills have many things in common. They would eliminate the current direct payment program, the counter cycle payment program, and a variety of other programs as well, and put into place new programs that would pay for them only when something bad happens, when prices are below average, or when revenues are below historical figure as well. So they have many things in common. They both would reduce the federal deficit on average, we estimate. So lots of things in common between the two bills.
You talked about the elimination of those current direct and countercyclical payments. What kind of effect will that have on producers out there? Should they expect less money coming into them, more money? What should they see?
On average, we estimate, and the Congressional Budget Office agrees, that we probably have less total dollars flowing from the federal treasury to farmers around the country. But in any given year, it may be different. The current direct payment program makes about $5 billion a year of payments, whether the rain falls or doesn't, when the price is high or the price is low. Under these new policies, you might get an even larger subsidy than you get today if prices drop a lot, if revenues are far below a recent average, but you wouldn't be getting a payment in a good year.
It seems to me, then, that this is maybe a less steady source of income then coming from the government to farmers? Would that be a fair assessment?
Yes, that's right. The direct payments are very predictable. The check has been coming every year in October, and that would continue until they're no longer available. Whereas, these policies, it may be some years where you get a lot of money, the next year you may get nothing at all.
Then what kind of impact do you think that will have on growers' decisions on what they do before they ever get into a season?
Well, it does mean that there's a certain downside risk protection that wouldn't be there in the current law. So, the direct payment's only so large, and again, no matter how bad things get, it's only going to be so many dollars coming to you. Under these policies, you'd have at least some protection if there were a significant downturn in the farm economy. It might not be as much as would have been available in some farm bills of the past, but nevertheless be more than that would be provided today. So that should give a little bit of security against some downside risk on markets in front of us.
Should farmers feel good about what's being proposed?
Well, again, pluses and minuses, and it probably depends on what kind of a farmer you are. There will be some types of producers in some parts of the country who will do very well under these proposals, others who won't do quite as well, and it will, of course, depend on the market circumstances as well. If prices were going to stay high, otherwise, these policies may not provide much support to the farm sector, but if there were to be a significant downturn, they may be much more important.
Now, you said that both of the versions of the bill, they have variations of this. How much difference is there between the two? And, which one can be seen as more favorable, the House or Senate version?
Well, they do have a lot in common, as I've said, but there are some important differences as well. The House puts much more emphasis on a policy that would pay farmers if prices fall below a trigger level. So their price loss coverage policy, as it's called, would make payments to corn and soybean producers, for example, if the price of corn falls below $3.70 a bushel, if the price of soybeans falls below $8.40 a bushel. Those are quite a bit lower than current market prices, but not as much below current market prices as they would have been a few months ago. In the case of the Senate bill, they put a lot more emphasis on a policy that would make payments when revenues per acre at the county level or the farm level fall below a trigger tied to recent prices and recent yields, either in the county or on the farm. So if under that bill, you'd have some protection. If there's even a smaller drop in returns in a given year, but you wouldn't have as much potential payment in a year where there was a complete collapse in market prices.
How big is the chasm then between these two? I mean, is there a reachable difference between the two, do you think, when they go into conference committee?
There are important differences, and I wouldn't want to make light of how easy it will or won't be to try to resolve them. But again, I think the bills have much more in common than many people probably realize. And so while I'm sure we're going to argue about just what types of support we're going to provide when to which producers, it seems like there should be the ability to figure out how to come up with a policy that everybody can live with. I think a much more difficult challenge, frankly, is going to be on the side of the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, the SNAP program, where the difference in the two bills are much, much larger and are probably only going to be resolved by the intervention of congressional leadership and or the president.
Given the current climate in Washington where, you know, they can't decide on a budget, they can't decide whether or not they even want to default, how optimistic are you that a deal can be worked out quickly on this farm bill?
Well, I mean, arguably, we've been having this debate for almost 3 years now. I mean, we started having a debate in 2011 already when there was some talk of trying to attach farm bill provisions to a budget bill at that time. You know, that ended up not occurring. We were supposed to pass a bill in 2012, and that didn't get done either. Just have the one-year extension that currently governs farm policy. And so now we're, you know, there's lots of questions about whether we're going to get this wrapped up in the near future or not. It is at least possible that the current budget debates may accelerate discussions and push us towards a conclusion, but there's also the chance that this may lag for some time yet. We do have a deadline of January 1st that if we don't do something by that time, there is a danger of going back to what's called permanent law, and that would require USDA to be prepared to purchase dairy products to support a price of milk that's much, much higher than current market levels.
What's the what are the odds then of just another extension on this, just to, I guess, move the field a little bit longer?
I don't think an extension is anybody's first preference at this point. I think if you talk to the folks in the House and Senate who are trying to negotiate a deal now, you know, that's what they don't want that to be the outcome. But it is also possible that if things really get stuck and they can't come up with a package that people can live with, then, you know, we may have to talk about some kind of extension just to get us past this January 1st deadline I talked about.
Pat, some good information. Anything else that our audience should take away from the FAPRI report on the House and Senate farm bills that are now pending?
Maybe one little thing that's of note in the report is something that doesn't happen. We talk a lot about farm policies being very important to not just farmers, but also to consumers around the country. And at least in our estimation, the impact of either of these bills on consumer food prices is very, very tiny, as in less than 0.1% difference relative to just a simple extension of current law. So whether or not these policies are very important to farmers, it doesn't appear likely that we're going to take a change in policies can have a big impact on consumers.
Pat Westhoff with FAPRI, thanks for talking to us again today.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity.